and it's a new track record.
The lights are on red. We're away.
Hello and welcome to Motopods, the internet radio show all about motorcycle road racing. This is episode number 261 for Wednesday the 16th of February 2011. Happy birthday, Valentino. My name's Martin Darlington. I'm across in the UK, and with me this week is Jules Cheesek across in California. How are you doing, Jules?
Good. Good. How's it going, Martin?
Yeah, excellent. Yes. as we were discussing earlier, I'm buzzing about the upcoming season, but I'm also buzzing about my upcoming wedding, which takes place in 2 weeks, 3 days, 9 hours, 23 minutes and 35 seconds. But who's counting?
So it's like about 10 minutes less now than when you told me last time.
Yeah.
Excellent. Good going.
Yeah.
That's exciting. Are we going to lose you for a while?
No, we're going on a brief domestic honeymoon. Just 5 days to a centre parks. We've never been to one before. It's like you basically stay in chalets in woods, and then they've got tennis courts and horse riding and archery and swimming pools, and it's a sort of crazy fitness type place. Extortionately expensive if you go during school holidays, but we're not. So, but we couldn't go without Mia. So Mia, our 10-year-old's coming with us. So we're looking forward to that enormously. So we're not actually having a conventional honeymoon, but then we're not having much in the way of a conventional wedding. So, except for the cost, which is crippling.
Yep.
But she's worth it.
Excellent. Yeah. In fact, weren't we going to dedicate this show to her since she's such a big Valentino Rossi fan?
She is a huge Valentino Rossi fan, yes. And Randy DiPugno, can't think why. And... Yeah, but Sharon's very much looking forward to the season as well. And the eagle-eyed listeners who've joined the Fantasy Road Race competition will notice I've got a bit into the future. And I've actually, when we put Sharon's name in, we put her in as Sharon Darlington in the anticipation. She's got to turn up now, see?
Very good.
Otherwise she looks silly on the Fantasy Road Race.
And speaking of which, we're up to how many people now?
We've got 38 38 of us now are in the league, and a bit later on, I'll just refresh people on how they can join and what it consists of and what it's all about.
Cool.
But yeah, no, it's the biggest mini league I've ever been part of.
It's gonna be it's gonna be tough competition in there too.
Yeah, if it gets too tough, though, I've worked out this morning as administrator, I can kick teams out. So if anyone's doing too well, I might sort of come up with some nonsense reason why I'm. No, I'm sorry, you breached the rules there.
Right. You have received your Form S/97.
Exactly. Yeah. And it was smudged. the dog ate my homework.
Last week we had the Motomatis calendar question from Scott Jones, which was a rider who won a race in three different classes, the 250, 350, and 500. And this particular rider did it in four different seasons. So it was the incredible Mike Haywood.
Mike the Bike, indeed.
Mike the Bike.
And my favourite story about him, and I've probably mentioned this before, is one of his mechanics at the Isle of Man, when he was doing the TT, he came and he said, look, it's just not pulling well out of this particular corner. one of his spanner fitters said, well, which gear are you in when you come out of that corner? He said, I don't know, remind me, how many gears has it got? And he knew nothing about the setup. He knew nothing about how it worked. He just got on it and rode it, which just makes it incredible.
I actually read this somebody else saying the same exact thing about him. Just like, I think it has five gears, and the guy's like, no, it has six.
Oh, I could go a bit quicker.
Yeah, it was 64 where he didn't race in the 250s. So 63, 65, 66, and 67 are the years. Anyway, Mike Hailwood. And the answers came in almost immediately as soon as the podcast was out. Josh Foss was first to answer correctly. Then we had Ed Hazer, not surprisingly. Anthony Zepke and Paul Mason. And we had other people that got it, but sorry, not in time.
Yeah, there were a lot of good answers coming. In fact, I didn't notice in the emails, I didn't notice any incorrect answers.
Well, I think you're either going to know or you're just not going to answer, right? I mean, like, I remember when Scott posed that question, I knew it couldn't have been Agostini because he didn't race 250s.
No.
Or 125. I mean, he raced 250s a little bit, I think, the first year that he was in GPs, and he didn't race 125, so that couldn't be it. So I was like, could be Mike Hailwood, I guess. Yeah. Good question.
Yeah, I think you are immediately going to look at the, as Rossi wonderfully put it, you know, the three of them stood on the podium of history, and you know Valentino's only raced in one series at a time, because, I mean, the idea of somebody doing that now is just couldn't do it.
No.
And then you think, well, why not? I don't know. No, there's not enough time in the day.
Well, you look at how Tony Elias is struggling in the preseason testing after coming off a Moto2 bike. Imagine doing that every single weekend, switching all. I mean, the bikes are so precise, and you know we'll be talking about that later. But
no, everything's got to be different.
Yep.
I suppose then one of the unifying characteristics of all three bikes would have been though that the tires were rubbish.
Exactly.
I don't know if that makes it. And this is like we're saying about Hailwood. I mean, Mike Hailwood did not understand very much about the mechanics and the technical aspect of what he was riding. He just got on and rode. So is that more impressive or less than someone like Valentino who can ride a bike, you know, do a lap on it, come back and diagnose everything that needs to be done, or at least identify everything that didn't quite feel right, and then Jerry interprets it, fixes it, and then it's better. So I don't know which is, I mean, Valentino's knowledge is more impressive, but does that put Mike Hailwood's talent, I don't know.
I mean, shall we get into this conversation now? Because this is perfect. We've been dodging each other for weeks now.
Yeah. it's a shame because I think a lot of the listeners are thinking, oh, this is going to get heated.
It's not.
I mean, I think we're actually pretty much saying the same thing. We're just coming at it from slightly different angles.
Yes.
That the cream will always rise to the top.
Yeah, exactly. It's impossible to say, oh, well, let's take, you know, Rossi. Let's play this little fantasy game and let's take Rossi back in time to those days. And, you know, I would actually argue that he would never race at the on an open road circuit. You know, he would never race at the Isle of Man successfully. I just don't think he in the form that he is in now, there's no way he would ever do it, because it's against everything that he learned as he was growing up to be a racer. So it's impossible to just transport these guys magically and then say, oh, well, you know, he had, you know, balls or skills or whatever, you know, to be able to compete today or back then, you know, move these guys around.
But I do think that what makes these guys so successful or so good is the ability to process information incredibly quickly. And then without thinking about it, they're, people talk about hand and eye coordination. Well, I think it's more than that. It's the ability to process and very, very delicately have a physical adjustment without actually thinking. I mean, on a really pond life level, I remember learning to hover a helicopter and thinking, I can't do it. And then the first times I could do it is when I stopped thinking about what I was doing. Mm-hmm. And as soon as I thought about it, I remember instructor saying to me, the idea is we're trying to get you to hover on a postage stamp. There's no need to begin by starting with a postal district, because I was all over the place. but it has to become a psychomotor skill. And I think that element of their skill will be universal throughout time. So that would have made Rossi a very, very, very good rider back in the 60s. Now, whether his particular skill set would have suited the conditions and the roads they rode on and the bikes they were riding and the tyres they were on, you know, you can never tell. It's going to always be the great mystery. But I do think, I mean, Jeremy Clarkson from Top Gear, I remember he did a series called Speed a few years ago on the BBC, and one of the episodes was trying to work out why some people are better than others at driving a car fast around the track. And they do this thing where they drop a ruler. And you have hold your hands 4 inches apart and someone drops a ruler between them and you have to catch it. And nearly everybody catches it at the same distance. And that's Jeremy Clarkson and Michael Schumacher. The difference is, so it's not just pure reaction speed. It's what you do with those reactions, you know, and it's how you process the information coming at you at that pace.
Yeah, I hear you. And I think that everybody who races at that level actually has that ability, except that the guys who are actually able to go beyond are the ones who can then also have enough left over, enough brain power, whatever, you know, left over that they can adjust the plan.
Yeah.
Because you take a guy, you know, some of these other guys who are riding, I mean, they're all riding on the edge because the machine, the limits of the machines are being reached, right?
Yes.
And then something is not quite right. There's this pinch is not quite right. The surface is bumpier than expected. The temperature lowered more than they expected, and the bike's behaving slightly different. And now their entire concentration is ruined, and they're making mistakes. Whereas the guys that are at the top, you know, your Lorenzos, your Rossi's, they have enough left over that they can still adjust the plan, you know?
Yeah. And this is what absolutely blew me away about Ben Spies, because that mental capacity thing, going back to the flying analogies, is a big thing. You know, there was a guy in my pilot's course who was told you can fly, but you can't do anything else at the same time. And as a military pilot, that's not good enough. So he got chopped, which sounds brutal, but it's that thing of, like you say, being able to do that thing that should take every ounce of concentration you've got, but then still have the capacity to plan. And watching Ben when he did his wild card at Valencia, looking over his shoulder, checking he wasn't getting in anyone else's way, you know, having to learn a new track. Well, not a new track because he'd been there with World Superbikes, but he wasn't exactly, you know, overly familiar with it. And just thinking, why is he keep looking over his shoulder? And it all explained afterwards when he was saying, I didn't want to get in anyone else's way. They're riding for championship points. I'm just, you know, buzzing about, having, you know, learning the place. Absolutely incredible.
Because he was still only about, you know, half second, maybe three quarters of a second off the top guy's pace.
Yeah.
It's not like he's circling there, you know, 5 seconds slower than the fast guy.
And when he hunted down Dovi, and we were all leaping about that one because we realized that if he pipped Dovi, then Colin got fifth in the championship. And it was an inevitability about it. And I just remember watching that and thinking, wow. Yeah, no, I mean, we knew he was special. He'd just come into World Superbikes in his first season and monstered it on a bike that was bordering on unrideable. You know, it was incredible. But I think that's the thing. It's when you get that ability to slow things down with that capacity, with the psychomotor skills, with the sensitivity, and absolutely no shadow of doubt about it, with enormous courage. There could be kids out there who are better riders technically than Valentino Rossi, but they've crashed once or twice, it hurt, and they thought, no, do you know what, I don't like that.
Right.
So they've never pushed it on. So you've got to have all those things together in that one package, which is why someone like Rossi comes along once in a racing generation.
Right. No, exactly. That muscle memory of pain is really, really hard to get rid of. You know, I had a crash. God, it's over 2 years now. In the mountains, it wasn't terrible. I didn't break anything. The bike was even rideable, but
I remember you. I remember the emails. Yeah,
it happened. So it was such a silly cause. Like, it was a split second of concentration loss, and I was down. And the, you know, and I was in pain. And now on that road, I'm always extra worried. There's no way I'm ever going to ride that road as quickly again.
No.
That's just it, you know?
It is. I mean, my first wet track day was up on Anglesey, which has a mini corkscrew. And I was, and I'd never ridden on full wets before. I'd not done a wet track day before. Then I'd been very lucky. And I'd just got my knee down in the wet. And I was thinking, I'm a motorcycling god, just before a high side. And it was only a baby high side. It was only a little one. And, I mean, the good bit was I knew why after I was talking to one of the instructors on the track day, and he said, oh, yeah, that's famous for it, that mini backstroke, the mini home straight, because as you come onto it, compared to the horizon, you're upright. And I knew, in the wet, you don't open the throttle till you're upright. He said, but it's slightly canted from left to right, going downwards. I just come around a left-hander, so you're level with the horizon, but not with the road. So when I opened the throttle, the back stepped out, I got flipped, and it bruised my buttock. That's all it did. And it freaked me out, absolutely freaked me out. I did say to him, did you not think it's worth mentioning that on the brief? And he said, yeah, we probably should have done, I suppose. But it took me a year to get back on the track, and that was Sharon got me a Ron Haslam day at the race school down at Silverstone. And I said to the instructor, look, I'm twitchy. I really was. The whole of last spring, I kept thinking, I'll go on a track. Yeah, I'll go on a track. No. And I kept putting it off. And I went back and absolutely loved it. So this year I'll get a few in. But, yeah, it really does stay with you, which kind of says to me, you know, people say you must think you've got the perfect job doing what I do, which I absolutely love. But, and I'd say, yeah, except for if I could have been a MotoGP rider. And I thought, no, I'm allergic to pain. I'd never live up to that Kenny Roberts thing. If you're not crashing, you're not going fast enough.
Right, exactly. You have to know what that limit is, and the only way you're going to do that is by crossing it.
Yeah.
You know.
And yet, it's so rare to see Valentino down.
Yeah, no, I remember when the last time he actually broke something, which was that shitty year he had in 2006, and he broke his wrist in
2007, wasn't it?
It was,
oh.
No, in 2006 he also busted his wrist up, I think, and...
Yeah, and right towards the end of 2007, he came off, didn't he? And in practice, was it Motegi? And he broke a couple of fingers, or he had a horrible time. But it was so rare to see him down.
Yeah, yep,
that you
exactly.
Think, well, maybe he's not going as fast. Maybe he's not going to his complete limit. But if it's quick enough, and it's back to the old winning at the slowest possible speed.
Well, he was crashing a lot in the 125s and 250s, especially the first 2 years there.
Yeah.
And even in 2000, but he was never getting hurt. And that's why his comeback last year was, he won a comeback of the year award.
Yeah, which a lot of people said, well,
yeah, because Randy DiPugno like came back also.
But Brandon didn't come back and win a race.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's like...
against some of the toughest competition out there. So, yeah.
That was which leads us, segues actually quite nicely into Happy Birthday, Dear Valentino.
Yeah.
Who is 32 today.
That's right.
Today being Wednesday, the 16th of February. And definitely unknown quantity for the season. I'm not sure how... running scared everyone else is of the Ducati effort this year. I think everyone's going to be looking at it with, you know, I mean, we were joking before the show saying, you know, it's definitely going to be the best season ever. It's going to be one of the most interesting for, well, since, I mean, I suppose the anticipation of the 800s coming in was quite high. And then, of course, Casey went and monstered the season. So,
right.
In retrospect, it wasn't that fascinating a season. Whereas, of course, I suppose really we're looking at, in anticipation terms, back to 2004. What can he do on this bike?
And it could be very quickly that we find out that he can't do that much, and it's going to be between, you know, Stoner, Lorenzo, and Pedrosa, for example. We don't know, but that's the cool thing about this season is that the number of players that could actually be fighting for the championship is very high.
Yeah.
It's like 2006 level, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, and I think that the key element, if you like, is, or another key element is, which teams, considering this is the last year of the 800s, have really done much in the way of bringing their bikes on from last year. And, you know, particularly I'm looking at Yamaha and thinking, well, you know, we've won for the last 3 years. Do we need to do that much? And I suspect that the ones who are throwing a lot of resources at it, possibly because they're the ones with the most resources, is Honda.
Yeah. Yeah, they do want to have one championship in the 800 era, obviously.
Well, as Braxy pointed out, I know that was a fantastic interview. There's some really good insights in there. And you just like listening to the guy talk, don't you, in that rather cute colonial accent. you might want to edit that out if you ever want to get him back on the show.
Oh, no. Oh, no, that stinks.
Damn. He's not UK-based, is he?
He will be a couple of times this year.
Excellent. he was saying, I've completely forgotten my train of thought now, but that was Honda pushing hard to bring the 800s in, mm-hmm. and they haven't won one. So that's going to be interesting. I mean, I've just put in the show notes that if we see anything from Valentino remotely resembling the 2004 switch, you know, he's on his way to sainthood. He's got to be. I think he will win races this coming season, but I'm not sure it's going to be many. And there's too many things have changed, and I just can't see that he's going to be able to, against the competition he's up against. Because you look back through, I mean, we've done a little career synopsis, and it's staggering. You just look at the numbers involved in Valentino's career, and you just have to, you know, take your hat off to him. I mean,
let's go through this. This is a great, great list.
1996 was his first world level series. In the 125s, he came ninth and he had one win. And Haruchika Aoki won that year. 97, Valentino wins the championship, 11 wins. In 98, he goes up to 250s, comes second in his first season with 5 wins. Loris Caparossi was world champion. And in 99, Valentino wins with 9 wins. In 2000, he goes up to the 500s, comes second in his first season. I mean, the one face I can see in the corner of my mental TV screen looking sad is Max Biaggi.
Exactly. What?
<It's> like, yeah, Mamma mia. He comes second to Kenny Roberts Jr. and wins 2 races in 2000. 2001, Valentino wins with 11 wins. 2002, the 990s come in. He wins with 11 wins. So he wins the championship and wins 11 races. In 2003, he wins the championship, still on the Honda, with 9 wins. Switches to Yamaha. Everyone says it's a dog. What's he doing? He's an idiot. It ain't going to work. And, you know, it's so difficult with hindsight to look back. And I remember at the time thinking, I remember saying to a mate, you know, no, I think he'll come good. It'll take a couple of years.
Right. That's what they were saying, too. It'll be a few races before we podium, you know.
Welcome the first race, and he wins it, and he's sat there, shoulders shaking, everyone thinks he's crying, and he said, no, I was laughing. 2004, wins the championship with 9 wins. 2005, wins the championship with 11 wins. Last year, the 990s, 2006, legendary year, Nicky Hayden's champion, Valentino comes second with 5 wins, and, you know, whether the rumours are true that he went out the night before and got hammered before the last race at... Valencia, and that's why he fell off. Ooh, never mind. 2007, the introduction of the 800s, Bob's fantastic description of the perfect storm. Casey, Bridgestone, Ducati, 800s, all come together, and Valentino came third with 4 wins. But then in 2008, he's back. Wins the championship with 9 wins. 2009, wins the championship with 6 wins. And, of course, last year, he came third with 2 wins, but he missed a third of the season.
Right.
You know, and of course, Jorge Lorenzo was the champion. And you look at it, you think 2010, the first year out of those 14 years of racing that Valentino missed a race due to injury. It's just incredible. I mean, how you maintain your hunger. Although I don't think it was his autobiography. And by the way, if anyone hasn't read What If I'd Never Tried It, it is really, really well written. That there must be a single-minded focus for him to have reached the heights he has, and yet it doesn't seem to affect him as a off-the-track personality. You know, you see it with Schumacher, and you can think, okay, you've got to respect that. He was a brilliant driver. Would I want to go out for a pint with him? Probably not. Valentino, yeah, I'd cut my arm off, you know, to go out and say to him, so how does it feel to be second best to Jorge Lorenzo? No. And that really is the end of any hopes we ever had of interviewing him. But I had to get that one in because I'm going to start sounding like one of the Rossinieri. But it is staggering when you look at the numbers.
Yeah, and actually this list, I mean, because you know we count these numbers. These numbers start to become kind of almost hard to imagine because it's been a very long time that we had a champion that had this many runs. Basically, it's like you said, a generation ago was the last time.
Yeah.
Yeah, so you look at this thing and you look at the photos of what he looked like when he won the 97 championship on the he was, you know, this little kid.
Yeah.
Goofy kid, you know. Yeah, no, we're very lucky that we have this kind of a talent that we get to watch. You know, and yeah, maybe it'll be over. We'll see. I mean, like you said, if he can turn this, if you can do this one more time on the third machine, what is it now? 7 years since the last time he switched brands.
I think if he did it.
7 years, yeah. Man. It's crazy.
But you look at him and think, well, I keep thinking he's 32. And then I think, yeah, and Troy Bayliss was 39 when he won the last world championship. You know, yeah. He turned 40 during that year, I think. So... And okay, people can say, well, World Superbike's a slightly lower level, but it's not 8 years worth.
No.
And you just think, yeah, that really, you know, he is clearly an extraordinarily talented individual. And if anybody can do it, I mean, look at Loris. Okay, Loris hasn't hit the heights that Valentino has by any stretch.
But he's been there forever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In fact, I can't remember a time of me watching fight. Yeah, I can actually. Yeah, he wasn't duking it out with Schwantz and Rainey, but that's the only thing I think about the Valentino era is when he was at his peak, you'd get somebody who could cross swords with him, Max and then Sete and, you know, and now Casey and Jorge and to a degree Danny. But and of course Nicky in 2006, but it imagine what it would have been like if Mick Doohan had been 10 years younger or Valentino had been 10 years older. You know, if you could have had two riders at that level going head to head, but, you know, hey, we can't pick the bit of history we happen to live in.
Right. I mean, maybe we do have that. Maybe we have exactly that. Maybe, you know, Mick Doohan has been, you know, reborn into Casey Stoner. No, I know what you're saying. So this, before we, you know, like lose ourselves in this Rossi, you know, love-a-thon, you were saying earlier, I think you were on the verge of saying it's not just the talent, it's also the continued motivation to do this, right? Because these guys, they live to race. They live to race. When he's not on his motorcycle, he's doing rally, you know, and you know, this sometimes has terrible consequences because, as we know, I don't know if you're following what's going on in Formula One with Kubica.
Yeah,
and there was a great discussion about this on the Formula One blog podcast about, you know, should teams allow these guys who get paid such ridiculously huge salaries, especially in Formula One, to, you know, go out and risk themselves in a much more dangerous sport, because rally racing is extremely dangerous.
Well, it's mad. Yeah.
It's totally mad, you know, and I don't know. I understand what the team's point of view might be, since they're seeking such incredible amounts of sponsorship and money and just.
That's been discussed over here a lot, because professional footballers here who are wrapped in cotton wool, they're not allowed to go on skiing holidays. They're not allowed to ride a motorcycle. They're not allowed to learn to fly. There's loads they're not allowed to do.
Oh, really?
For exactly that reason. Oh, goodness, no, they're absolutely wrapped in cotton wool. But if you can understand why. I mean, their owners must be concerned, because if one of them gets lightly touched on a football pitch, they fall over clutching their face.
That's right.
But they're not allowed to do. You know, you couldn't go on a track day in the off season if you fancied it, because your insurance would be invalid. They are absolutely wrapped in cotton wool. They allow them to drive, you know, 500 horsepower supercars, but then they're meant to keep to the speed limit. So, you know, it's crazy, but I think the point you're going to make is you can't stop them.
You can't stop them, and you can. You know, these people are born with it, and you know, Valentino Rossi was born to do this. This is his thing. This is.
But there's a great line. I mean, on that subject, there's a great line in his book where he said when he went from go karts to bikes, because his family couldn't afford to keep going in go karts because the costs obviously rise and rise, and his mother said that your dad rode bikes. It's dangerous. He had friends who got killed. Do you really want to do it? And his reply was, what do you want me to do? Lock myself in my room and be happy because I'm safe. And I absolutely love that. And I think Mary Spee said something very similar when she's been criticised as Ben came through the racing ranks. You know, how can you let your son go out and do this? She's like, well, yeah, I could stop him, but I might as well just put a pillow over his head and smother him because that's his life.
Right, exactly.
Like you say, you can't stop it. And I think the thing with Valentino as well, it's, I think some of them, they're driven to win. It's the winning. I think he just loves the impression you get, and if it's an act, it's a damn good one that he's kept going for 15 years. He just loves riding that bike to its limits, and he happens to find that his and the bike's limits are generally a bit further ahead of everyone else's. Boy, they certainly have been.
I mean, I don't want to, you know, name names, but there are certainly riders out there who ride for other reasons than just riding. They, you know, there is a financial and fame kind of riders out there, you know, who are out there for those reasons. And they don't achieve those big things that Rossi does, but they're, you know, they make their money. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then they end up in BSB eventually.
Okay. Yeah. The cogs didn't have to turn many turns before that one fell into place. But this is also Jorge Lorenzo and the Spartan emblem, you know, it's not, I think some people think, oh, you saw that film 300 and you thought that's cool. No, I think he identifies with the Spartan mentality of, you know, I mean, Spartan society, the men lived in barracks and they visited their wives a couple of times a year to produce the next generation. But in between that, it was all about you give up all those comforts. He dropped his girlfriend. He dropped his dad as team manager when he felt taking him as far as he could. And you know, nice to see that they're now chums again. But it's that thing, I'm so single-minded on what he wants to achieve. He will, however much he liked his girlfriend, and I'm sure he did, it was like, no, you're actually a distraction. Something's got to give, and I'm afraid it's not going to be my racing career. So off you go. And he said, you know, he'll have plenty of life after he finishes racing when he can do those sorts of things. Wow. I'm not sure I could forego the Guinness and the girlfriend. No. soon to be wife.
Right. The people who achieve in their area of, you know, whatever focus, are unbelievably dedicated. There's no way around it. I mean, there are lucky people out there who achieve success. That's usually a financial or actors or whatever. I don't know. I don't want to say that there's no talent there, but in every field you have to be 100% committed, and then those are the guys who rise to the top.
Yeah.
You know, and in this field when you add the element of danger, you know, which, as we know, quite well from last year's injuries.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
It's always there. It's always there. It's really something. It's really something.
Yeah. Yeah. Incidentally, did you see the after the flag, they did a tribute to show at Tomizawa.
Fantastic.
Which was absolutely. It was. I found myself laughing, with sort of, you know, slightly moist eyes, thinking, "God, it's smoky in here."
Yeah.
And yet there's that wonderful. What's the word? Dichotomy. But that you're torn between you thinking, oh, what a character, and then remembering that unfortunately he is no longer there. But you can see as well that there's something, I don't know. I'm too inclined to find any excuse to fire arrows at Formula One, but it just doesn't look as like having as much fun. They seem with. I mean, Mark Webber accepted, and certainly from a few years ago, Jenson Button was a bit quite lively and fun, but most of them just seem really quite bored. Not bored, but they just don't seem to have as much fun. And then you look around the paddock, even at MotoGP, and especially at things like World Superbike, and there's banter and there's, you know, wind-ups going on and all sorts. It just... I find it incredible that they can be so single-minded and yet so human.
Well, I think that Formula One crosses into that fame and fortune. It crosses over a certain line where there's the reality is distorted beyond recognition for those people, and they live in a different world. They live in a completely different world. You know, the Troy Bayliss's. Noriki Hagas, you know, I'm sure to some degree Rossi, despite the fact that he is very wealthy, but those guys still seem like they're still in touch with the same reality you and I are in. You know, Felipe Massa, different planet.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, Fernando Alonso.
Ugh, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's not beat up on those guys, though, because they do, you know, they do entertain a very big chunk of the world's population.
Well, they give people something to watch at the beginning and the end of their afternoon nap. I'm going to hell for that one. In other news, because although it is Valentino's birthday today, there is a bit of other news breaking. Yamaha are going to unveil a new factory team livery in Malaysia on the 21st of February. And we had a little discussion going on Facebook, and there was some really funny, and I should have got the Facebook page up. There was some very funny, who's going to sponsor them.
It's not going to be us, because our funds are unfortunately a little short.
No, we did offer. We said we will pay for the stickers, which will say MotoPod at motopodcast.com, and send them to you. We won't charge you mail, and they didn't reply. But the fact is, in Malaysia, Tony Fernandez is based there. He owns Air Asia. They've been rumoured for a while to be interested. I'm just wondering if Air Asia are going to prove to be the main sponsor or Petronas. And if it were Air Asia, their colours are red. Now, that would be weird. It's weird enough seeing Valentino in red. But to see the Yamahas in red, it'd just be like... But I wonder if that
back
could
to
be
2002 or well 2003 yeah. 2003 they were still red, because they were still Marlboro then. No, 2003 was Ducati Marlboro. So
yeah, I can't remember.
2002 was the last time.
But could it be a bit of a cunning ploy just to confuse Valentino? Because be like, hang on, I've got so many teammates out there. There's the one I don't like. No, it's on a different red. There's one I do like.
It's very easy. It's very easy for the one who he likes is the guy who's behind him. Those are the teammates that he likes,
well,
right?
Yeah, there is that. And yeah, because I've heard it said before, well, he gets on really well with Nicky Hayden, and yet Nicky Hayden beat him to 2006 World Championship. I suspect Valentino's mind, he doesn't see Nicky as on the same level as him.
No, he doesn't. I mean, I'm sure he sees that championship as an odd one.
anomaly, yeah.
You know.
Yeah. And I do think, and in a way, going back to the thing of if we could have had Mick Doohan 10 years younger or Valentino 10 years older, this is why I think he's re-motivated, because he just wants, I think he wants a bit of time just to prove to the world, and personally I don't think he'll be able to do it, that however fast Casey, Jorge, Danny are, they're not at his level. And I think now, accepting the fact that a lot of these guys are 10 years younger, I think they are, personally. Mm-hmm. I think this year, I think the one to watch is Casey Stoner, because I cannot believe he can get off the bucking Bronco, get onto, well, actually, thinking about it, the Honda beginning of last year was a bit of a bucking Bronco itself, but he can get onto this bike that he said is so different, and he's just quick. You're like, that
boy natural is, talent.
Oh, man. Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, he's just got to remember to stay off the milk.
yeah.
And
it's going to be fascinating, you know, especially when we go to Qatar, because we know the Ducati's there, been good there. And we know that Casey Stoner is good there. Honda has not been good there, but Casey Stoner is, right? He was, you know, he was good on the 990 Honda back there in 2006. So it's going to be fascinating. That first race is going to be, you know, I mean, it's such a goofy round, like in terms of, you know, it doesn't mean we really don't know anything until we go to Europe. That's when.
No, as Jim said last week, it's not one from which you can draw that many conclusions, other than, well, that someone's going to have 25 points in the bag.
Yeah, you know? Exactly.
Yeah. And of course, Jorge has always done well. I mean, his very first season, back in 08, he got pole position first time out. And you think, oof, wow.
Yeah.
And I think he was second or third. I can't remember. But, yeah, he does well there. But it is, yeah. And last year, remember, we watched Casey just blast away with it and thought, okay, here we go. And then, of course, the front end washed out. So,
And it'll be interesting to see if that happens to Rossi as well.
Although, yeah,
I have a feeling that I mean, they're putting so much work into everything that we've heard about the Ducati from Rossi and the crew is about the front end. So they're working on it.
Yeah, and I'm just adding a quick note there. I suspect that as we've seen, Randy's been quite quick on the Ducati, and people have said that's because he's just a. He is a confident rider rather than a confidence rider, so he'll just push it, and that's supposedly how you got heat into that tyre and made it grip, whereas the guys are a bit more tentative, you know, didn't do so well. But speaking of Casey, by the way, and talking about the Phillip Island date change debate, he's pitched into it, agreeing with Braxy, saying, guys, you can move it to the early season and is at the beginning of the season and have just as bad weather as you do at the end. So you're not actually going to gain anything. And I'm thinking, why are they talking about the ends of the seasons? Why don't they stick it in the middle? Although I suppose they always try and get the flyaways close together. You don't want in the mid of European and the American rounds to have to be going off to Australia. But I'd hate to see that round go.
Me too.
I love that track. I
look forward to it every single year in every series.
Yeah.
Yep, absolutely.
And, of course, it's one of the few anti-clockwise courses we run on.
No. It's called left-handed.
Left-handed circuit. Left-handed,
yeah. Anti-clockwise.
Yeah. Well, it is, isn't it? If Casey's the tip of the second hand, I'd be the tip of the hour hand going backwards. yeah, 5 last year, 6 this year, isn't it? Because Aragon's back in. So, six last year and 6 this year, I think. We go left-handed. And speaking of bad weather, a little bit more in the news, the Moto2 and 125 test at Estoril was really hit by heavy rain yesterday. Some people got some laps out, and it is worth mentioning Kenan Sofwoglu is back with his team, and I believe his father did die, which
he did pass away.
He's had some really bad luck, hasn't he, that fella? really sad, and if it can, hopefully it will focus him rather than defocus him, because I'm really looking forward to the Moto2 season. I think Scott Redding's looking
incredible,
stronger than he was at the end of last season, and he was looking strong then. Keenan's in, and we're going to have, and I think Marc Marquez is really one to watch. I mean, you listen to Julian Ryder talk about him, and he says when he saw Danny Pedrosa, he thought it's Eddie Lawson reincarnated. He said, now I've seen Marc Marquez, I thought, no, no, that's Eddie Lawson reincarnated. It just, I mean, that Estoril race last year.
Oh, my God.
And the ones you know, they red flagged it, and he crashed going round to line up on the grid, and then he came from the back, and his team holding out, they did the, in the look back at the year, they did the team holding up, the second is fine, second, don't, no, oh God, no, he's overtaken again. It's like, and it's back to the thing, you can't stop them.
Yeah.
They're racers. This is what they do, you know. Brilliant. And I remember at the time saying, could this be the birth of a legend? If it isn't, who's going to remember me saying that? If it is, I can say you heard it here first, you know.
Do the MCN approach. Nice.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. Yeah, we're steeped in it. Yeah, make crazy predictions and then just hope no one remembers when nothing happens.
Okay, what else is going on?
We've got the new ZX10R, which has been road tested, the road going version that you or I could go and buy, if they did it in anything other than that green. Have you seen Jim's note?
Yes, I have. I heard that.
Yeah. It's been criticised in some, not a lot, but some of the British press, and they're saying, yeah, technically it's a really, really good bike, but it's just too difficult to ride. And it was coming last in the, or second last in their, most of their cover all the bases road tests against the R1, the BMW S1000RR, the Blade, and the GSX R1000. But a lot of them would say, No, only the very, very best riders are going to be able to, you know, get the full potential out of this bike, which is a shame because it's got a lot of potential. And you think, well, from a racing point of view, that's pretty good.
I know.
Because the racers are the very best riders. So it's going to be interesting. I mean, Tom Sykes is doing well in the pre-season testing. He did well on it last year. I mean, was it Monza watching him backing it in, or Nürburgring? No, it was Nürburgring. Watching him, I think, sideways going in some of those corners and leading for a good part at the beginning, but I suspect destroying his tyres as he did it. And, so my comment was Jim might get to wear his puke green gear with pride at last, and then in brackets he's put on the show notes, I heard that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Darn. I forgot he can read them as well.
But it is interesting how... because that would be a huge turnaround for Kawasaki. They were, you know, they were the worst machine to for a number of seasons in Superbikes and Super Sport. So,
and MotoGP.
And well, obviously in MotoGP, now they're gone.
I think the only fly in the ointment if they do well is they will feel vindicated in having pulled out of MotoGP. And concentrated on, and I mean, Kawasaki as a overall company are huge. I mean, they're a heavy engineering company, but the bikes are a little bit of a, you know, sideshow for them, I suppose. But, you know,
like a pet project almost, maybe.
Yeah. Bit of a hobby. But you're right. It would be good to see them back up there. I always like to see, and this is what I love about World Superbikes. You can see a podium with three different manufacturers on it, sometimes three different teams of different sometimes you see the same manufacturer, but it's different teams in there. We saw Carlos Checa being the fastest Ducati on a number of occasions last season.
Yeah, exactly.
Of course, we don't have the Ducati factory team this year, which I suppose really is World Superbikes going back to its... Well, that's been their excuse. World Superbikes going back to their... original concept, which was its production bikes with privateer teams.
Isn't BMW still a full factory team?
Yeah, BMW still is. And I mean, Tenkata are funny, aren't they? They're not an official factory team, but they're near as damn it might as well be.
Right.
And oh, I'm so looking forward to seeing those Castrol Hondas go mount. I like Johnny Ray. I think he's a real talent who I accept your point made previously. He's had some rough edges, but he's so entertaining to watch. And, you know, if he can focus the talent, I think he's one to watch for the future. And very entertaining, particularly when he looks around for his bike and can't understand why he can't see it, which was, I think it was Monza, wasn't it? When he crashed, his bike leapt the barriers. By the time he picked himself up, it had disappeared over the tire wall. And he stood there doing a comedy. But hang on, where's it gone?
It was
no wonder I crashed. I haven't got a bike.
It was amazing.
Yeah, well, thank goodness he was all right.
I mean,
that was... Yeah, hoping we don't see Leon Camus setting his leathers on fire too often this season, which he did.
He's the guy that I'm actually very interested in seeing.
Yeah.
Of course, Leon Haslam is... I'm just going to be rooting for him because I think he kind of got robbed by the lack of support from Suzuki last year. But yeah, Camier, and of course, I'm so happy to see that Haggas is back, and... we'll see how he actually does, but I was afraid that he was done, because when a racer, you know, going again back to what we were talking about earlier with Rossi and all these, you know, the legends, he's one of those guys that just seemed, you know, fearless and always riding on the edge, and to hear him say that he kind of gets scared from that crash with Schaus and the Phillip Island.
Yeah.
That you know, hearing that from a racer is like, oh man, it's over, dude. It's over.
But he defies opinion. I mean, some of the really well considered, really well respected bike commentators and journalists will say, you know, no, not a fan of Norihaga. He's, you know, he has a talent, but he doesn't have enough of a range of talents to ever be world champion. You know, I've heard him described as a choker, and I've thought, I don't see that. I mean, the last year when James Toseland won in 2007, Norrie was just desperately unlucky. I mean, there were that many incidents you could say when Max wiped him out, and I'm trying to remember which track it was at. That would have been enough. That would have been seen him world champion. I don't think Norrie is going to win it now.
Right,
but I was thinking last year, look, if your mind's not in the right place, please stop. Retire, because I think he's another one. How you can be such a aggressive rider on the track and yet be such a nice guy off it? I mean, it does seem to go. There seem to be a lot of the Japanese riders who can make that transition on the track. You know, Paul Denning, talking about Loris, said, you know, what a lovely guy to go out for dinner with of an evening. He's genial, jovial. Get him on the track, he just wants to kill everybody. And you think, yeah, that's I suppose that is the way it should be. And I just think, no, it's fantastic.
Yeah.
But, so we've got World Superbikes, of course, coming up in
2 weeks.
10 days' time.
Oh, 10 days. Wow.
Yes, week on Sunday.
Wicked.
First race, Phillip Island. Oh, it's back. The season's back. Best season ever. In all the different categories.
What's the first weekend for BSB?
The first race for BSB is... it's the opener is at Brands Hatch, but that's not till the end of April.
Oh, okay.
Because remember last year,
right.
They went to do the opening round at Brands Hatch, and they couldn't because there were 3 feet of snow on it. which is extraordinary. But that brings us nicely into just a little reminder for the Fantasy Road Race 2011. If people go to www.motorcyclenews.com/FRR for Fantasy Road Race, or you can go through the Motorcycle News website through Sport and then Fantasy Road Race. You need to register. It's all free. And then you pick a team, and basically you're given a $10 million budget.
Is it dollars or pounds? I believe it's pounds, isn't it?
Oh, it probably is pounds. Yes, sorry, pounds.
Because, yeah, you're trying to shorten me here, dude.
Yeah. Yeah, American competitors, you have to use the current exchange rates. No. it's in pounds, and you pick two MotoGP riders. I mean, they're all given a nominal value, basically depending how well they did last year and how well they thought to do this year. You have to pick two MotoGP riders, two World Superbike riders, and two British Superbike riders. There are transfer windows through the season. Every few races, you'll get a chance to swap to your riders around. Remaining within your budget, you can do three changes each time. It is worth looking at the calendar and seeing which races come up, and you might want to say, oh, well, he's really good at these circuits, so I'm going to put him in, and et cetera, et cetera. But it's very difficult to pick. Well, you're not going to get six top riders because you'll be about 2.5 times over your budget. But once, if you join, you go to the My Team page, and at the bottom it will say, there's a red tab saying Enter New League. If you go in there, you have two options, create a new league or join an existing league. Go to join existing league and put in our PIN number, which is 1477, and it will take you to the MotoPod Listener League. As we mentioned earlier, we've got 38 listeners and staff, if you like. Are we staff? Do we call ourselves staff? Unpaid
okay.
staff.
Sounds good. I like it. We're staff.
The staff riders, the staff team managers and the listener team managers are all in there. Including my wife to be. And what I like about it is it gives an extra bit to watching a race, because it's like, oh, okay, there's someone, I only wedged him in there because he was cheap or because, you know, that fitted and he's doing really well. I'll get some points. But the trick is, can you let your head rule your heart? Because you look down, because you look at each other's teams, you can see what other people are doing. And by the way, till the season starts, you can make unlimited changes. So don't necessarily think, those of us who've done it before, the team we're currently displaying is the one that will start. But, you know, most people have piled on Valentino because most people are Valentino fans. As I've said before, I tried getting on the bandwagon. There wasn't any room left. So I had to get on the virtually empty one behind, driven by an old Mallorcan farmer with a battered straw hat and a bit of, and an old cheroots hanging out of his mouth. But there you go. So do please come and join in. People can join during the season, but obviously they'll start with a disadvantage because they'll have lost points from the first round. So you've got till Phillip Island. I think it's midnight on the Saturday night. 4 o'clock in the morning on a Saturday. So you can watch FP1. And then quickly say, quick, drop him, he's rubbish.
Or you got hurt. But, whatever.
Yeah.
And then we're, of course, going to also have the Ride On 2 tipping competition. And I highly also recommend the MotoGP Fantasy League on MotoGP.com. That's
true. Now, that's MotoGP, Moto2, and 125. Is that
it's
right?
It's just MotoGP. It's just MotoGP.
Oh, it's just MotoGP. Right.
But you basically get to pick the entire field. You predict the entire finishing order, and then it gets compared to. You collect. You know, if the guy you picked wins, if the guy you picked first wins, then you get 25 points. If you basically it's the highest. It's the highest of the two, right? So, like, if you said they're going to finish second, but they actually finished fourth, you're going to get points for fourth. If you said they're going to finish fourth, they win, you still get fourth, right? So
and
you go all the way down, and they do it every round. And the next thing is, of course, and you didn't mention that, I didn't even know this, but if you win the MCN Fantasy League overall, there's a Yamaha 125.
Yeah, the first year there was an R1. Last year, when they did it, there was this R6, and now they're down to an R125, which I think is a reflection on the world's economy. But there's also, because the season's broken down into rounds with transfer windows in between, where there's a bit of a natural break, the round winners will get a set of tyres, you get a goodie bag from one of the bike dealers, you know, stuff like that. So there's little prizes as you go along, and it's completely free. But to be honest, I mean... what the highest I've ever been overall was seventh, and that was after round one 2 years ago. And after that, I'm generally in the thousands somewhere. Last year, in our mini league, which was the Friends of Wales Air Ambulance one last year, I was streets ahead. I was 2003's Troy Bayliss, and unfortunately, Jim proved to be 2003's Colin Edwards, because I kept picking riders who then immediately got injured. and Jim just hit some really good predictions towards the end and overhauled me and actually beat me quite comfortably. So I was humbled. But if you can bring your ride on to tipping form to Fantasy League, Jules, you might be arranging for the shipping of a YZF-R125, so you never know. Have you won it overall?
In the round two?
Yeah.
2 years in a row. But then I got smushed last year towards the end of the season.
Right.
I got totally smushed.
Yeah. The only thing I don't like about it is like picking the first DNF. I'm always
We've talked about changing that, but we never get around to it.
No. And it could be a mechanical. Right. But I'd always pick the second. I'd think whoever crashed out first or had a mechanical first, I'd think, damn you. Why? Why couldn't you just kept your wheels up for, you know, kept it upright for another lap? Anyway.
Yeah, and we don't want to be picking, you know, guys falling off. That's
no.
I liked one of the ride on two moderators, Heidi Kender. He just always picks all riders to finish.
Yeah,
for the DNF choice, because, you know, once in a while he's right, but mostly it's good karma. I like that.
That's very civilized.
Yep.
Super great stuff.
Okay, so let's wrap it up. We'll have links to all that stuff in the show notes. And I believe that's pretty much it.
Well, the only other thing that I did find slightly interesting with my cynical head on is Corrado Ceccanelli has been appointed the MotoGP Director of Technology.
Right.
Director of Ducati, where we currently see Valentino Rossi residing. And Dorna are very aware that Valentino is the biggest draw for non-hardcore bike racing fans to watch MotoGP. Conspiracies all over the place.
Yeah. And actually, he was actually already contracted out last year. It's just today is when Dorna made the actual press release.
Yeah.
So now it's official now, whatever that official means. I think that he's been working on this stuff with the Motorcycle Manufacturers Association for a while now. So I don't know. I mean, they're obviously preparing for those major changes we're going to have in 2012. You know, will it really make a difference? I mean, is he really going to be speaking on the behalf of Dorna or somewhere closer to the Motorcycle Association?
Yeah. You know,
the Manufacturers Association, I mean. We'll see.
But thinking about next year, of course, we'll also have the opportunity with the arrival of the thousands to say that next season is going to be the best season ever after this season, which will have been the best season so far ever.
Right, but you're jumping ahead a little too far. This is the best season ever right now.
Absolutely. Let's enjoy it. Yeah.
All right.
Let's wish our lives away.
Very good.
Brilliant.
Okay. Well, again, so thanks for listening. We'll be back next week. Happy birthday to Valentino Rossi.
Yes. Yeah, 32. Don't forget, you're getting old, Valentino. About time you put the slippers on and took it easy.
I think it's going to be a while before he gets to that stage. All right. Very cool.
No
thanks.
Chance.
Thanks very much, Martin. You're on coffee still for a while.
Yeah.
And so
absolutely.
A great day. Have a great day.
And you, Jules. Have
I'm
a good
bed. Yep.
Yeah. Thanks to everyone, and we'll speak to you soon.
Yeah.
Good night.